When Frank had finished slamming the heel of his boot against the door to Charles Dutton's Magnolia Mansion, he almost tripped over Chuck's body. Seeing movement on the other side of a shadowy foyer, he leveled his peacemaker in that direction and prepared to fire.
Hold it!
Don't shoot! Oh, please, sir, don't kill me!
Frank's eyes were adjusting to the dimness inside the house by now. He saw a skinny man in a dark suit cowering on the other side of the foyer.
Who are you?
My name is Willoughby, sir. I am Mr. Dutton's assistant.
Is that so? Then I reckon you might have an idea where he is right now, huh?
Please, sir. I can't betray Mr. Dutton.
Why not? He's betrayed just about everybody who ever crossed his trail. He's a crooked, murdering skunk.
If you know that about him, sir, then you know why I don't dare.
If you know who I am, you know I'll kill you if you don't tell me what I want to know. You know who I am, Mr. Willoughby?
You're the gunfighter, Frank Morgan, the man who wants to kill Mr. Dutton.
Do you know why I want to kill him?
Mr. Dutton was partially responsible for the death of your wife.
That's right. Now, about that question I asked you.
Nevada! He's gone to Nevada!
What the hell's he doing in Nevada?
I don't know for sure. It's something about finding enough gunmen to take care of you if you survive the trap he set for you here.
So that's it. He's gone west to Fort Up to make a last stand.
That's the impression I had, yes, sir.
What's the name of this place in Nevada?
You best believe
I'll shoot you, Bean Counter.
Buckskin. It's an old ghost town, Mr. Dutton called it, known as Buckskin.
Then that's where I'll be going. I reckon Dutton will be expecting me.
Yes, he will. And he'll have an army of killers with him.
That's all right. I already waded through blood to get this far. I reckon some more of it won't hurt me.
Virginia City had been a pretty grandiose name when this settlement was just a rough little mining camp in the foothills of the Sierra Nevadas. Now, 20 years on down the road, it was a real city with brick-paved streets and gas lights and large brick buildings. It had been several days and another long train trip since the battle at Charles Dutton's summer home in Magnolia, Massachusetts. But ever since he had crossed the Mississippi, Frank had felt a sense of contentment returning to him. It didn't mean that his mission was any less urgent, but damn, it felt good to be back in the West, back home. The air was clear and held a hint of refreshing coolness, despite the fact that it was still summer. It also helped that he had stopped in Denver to pick up Wolf and Stormy. He had missed them. After all, they were probably his best friends. Frank had found the assay office and tied Stormy's reins to the hitch rack outside. Leaving Wolf on the sidewalk, he went inside and made his inquiries of the clerk working there.
Morning.
Morning, sir. How can I help you?
I'm looking for a town called Buckskin. Ever heard of it?
Buckskin. Never heard of it. But it might be on one of our maps. Let's take a look.
Probably have to be an old map. I think the place is a ghost town.
Let's see. This is the oldest map book we have.
After a few minutes searching with a magnifying glass, the old man found it.
I'll be dogged. Right there, you see? It's in the mountains southeast of here.
Any roads up there?
Trails, I suppose. I've never been there, so I don't know for sure. I can check the records and see how long it's been since the mines were worked.
Taking a big book from another cabinet, he flipped through it until he located the entry he wanted.
Ah! There were three mines registered in the vicinity of Buckskin. The Alhambra, the Crown Royal, and the Lucky Lizard.
Any of them still producing?
Oh, Lord, no. The silver veins around there petered out a long time ago. I'm sure all the diggings are abandoned, as the town itself surely is.
You have a record of who owned those mines?
Of course. Let's see. The Alhambra was owned by Milton Jernigan, the Crown Royal by a company called the Browning Mining Syndicate, and the Lucky Lizard by someone named Thomas Woodford.
Frank barely heard the last part of the clerk's sentence. He was still stuck on the name of the company that had owned the Crown Royal mine.
Did you say the Browning Mining Syndicate?
Oh, that's right.
How long ago was the mine producing?
The last record I have is, from 1885. It must have closed down shortly after that.
Less than 10 years ago. Dutton had already been working for Vivian at that time. That was how he had known about Buckskin, known that the town would be deserted and a good place to hide out.
Are the claims that were registered back then still in effect?
Well, yes, but they're not worth anything. Like I told you, the silver's all gone.
Frank nodded. He wasn't interested in the mine itself, but the fact that it had been part of Vivian's holdings meant that he now owned part of the claim. If he had known that, he might have been able to look up the information about Buckskin in his lawyer's offices back in Denver. Paperwork relating to the claim was probably buried somewhere in their voluminous files. But it didn't matter. He was here now, and he knew where he was going, and he knew what he planned to do when he got there. Frank got a room at the International Hotel, the finest lodgings available in Virginia City. The hotel was a 5-story brick building, complete with gas lights, running water, and an elevator, although Frank took the stairs, since the idea of being stuck in a little room that moved up and down between floors had never appealed all that much to him. As he ate a fine supper in the hotel's dining room that evening, a barrel-chested man in a black hat and brown tweed suit came into the room, looked around, and then started toward him. Frank didn't need to see the star pinned to the hombre's vest to know that he was a lawman.
You'd be Frank Morgan?
That's right, I would. Have a seat, Sheriff.
You know who I am?
I can read. Star says Sheriff, so I assume it's right.
I'm Sheriff Abner Lowell. One of my deputies saw you get off the train this afternoon and recognized you.
And you looked me up just to say hello. Kind of you, Sheriff.
Listen, Morgan. You know damn good and well this isn't a social call. I'm here to tell you that I don't want you killing anybody in Virginia City, or anywhere else in the county for that matter.
I'm not planning on killing anybody in your jurisdiction, Sheriff.
Then why are you here? Notorious gunmen like you, you gotta be looking for trouble.
Now there's where you're wrong, Sheriff. I'm not looking for trouble at all.
And that was the truth. Frank Morgan was looking for justice.
Well, you just remember what I told you, Morgan.
Every word of it, Sheriff.
The lawman stomped out of the dining room. Some of the hotel's guests at the other tables were staring at Frank now, wondering what the confrontation with the sheriff had been all about. He smiled and nodded to them, and they looked away. Frank wasn't going to let this encounter spoil his dinner. He ordered deep dish apple pie for dessert and thoroughly enjoyed it. He washed down the pie with another cup of coffee and then went upstairs to his room. Once the supplies were loaded, Frank had mounted up and rode out with Wolf trailing behind him. He had no farewells to make before he left. The only person he'd really met in Virginia City was Sheriff Abner Lowell, and he knew the lawman wouldn't be sorry to see him go. Lowell probably had at least one deputy keeping an eye on him. The sheriff would be relieved when he got the report that the notorious Frank Morgan had left town. He made camp that night in a rugged Badlands area. By noon the following day, Frank had crossed the Walker River and was climbing into timbered foothills again. His skin tingled, and every nerve in his body was vital and alive. Stormy and Wolf seemed to feel the same way. It felt so good to be out in the open again that Frank almost wished they could just keep drifting for a while. Almost, but not quite. He couldn't forget what had brought them here in the first place. Dutton was still out there somewhere, and as long as he was alive and free to draw breath, Frank couldn't abandon his quest. Frank had memorized the route and all the landmarks on the old topographical map in the assay office, so he had no trouble following the trail. By late afternoon, he knew he was close.
Easy, Stormy. What's going on up there?
Even though the shots weren't being directed at him, he could tell by the urgent sound of them that they were serious.
Somebody's in trouble up there. A whole heap of trouble from the sound of it. Come on, Stormy, get up!
There was a rise up in front of him. Frank urged Stormy up the slope at a fast pace and didn't rein in until the Appaloosa had reached the top. From there, he could look down into a narrow valley and the ramshackle buildings that lined a main street.
That's Buckskin. I guess we were closer than I thought. That can't be more than half a mile.
About midway between the abandoned settlement and the ridge where Frank sat his horse, a lone rider plunged and careened along the trail, trying desperately to escape from half a dozen pursuers who were also on horseback. The guns in their hands spouted flame as they fired at the fugitive.
I don't know who that guy is, Stormy, but I think the odds are a little unfair, don't you?
Not only that, but chances were the six gunmen were some of Dutton's hired killers. And there was that old saying about the enemy of an enemy being a friend. Frank was reaching for his Winchester, intending to spray some lead among those hard cases and maybe give the Lone Rider a chance to escape, when the fugitive's mount suddenly lurched, stumbled, and fell. The horse had probably been hit by one of those bullets that were flying around. The rider was thrown out of the saddle and sailed through the air, only to hit hard on the trail ahead of the fallen horse and roll over a couple of times. Frank left his rifle where it was. He couldn't help that poor hombre now. The gunmen were too close.
Oh, Lord. What is this?
Frank caught his breath and stiffened in surprise as he saw that the fugitive's hat had come off, releasing waves of long blonde hair that tumbled around the person's head. Some Western men, such as Wild Bill Hickok and Commodore Perry Owens and the ill-fated George Armstrong Custer, sported long hair. But Frank didn't think that was what he was looking at here. That hunch was confirmed when the men who had been giving chase dismounted and yanked the fugitive upright.
That's a woman.
The woman, who appeared to be shaken up a little by her fall, but not badly hurt, was marched to the horses and forced to mount and ride double with one of the gunmen. The whole group headed back into Buckskin.
Let's get a closer look here.
Frank took a pair of field glasses from his saddlebags and studied the town itself. Most of the buildings seemed to be in a state of disrepair, but only a few had begun to collapse. The rest were still standing and could have been fixed up if anybody wanted to go to the trouble of doing so. A half dozen of the cabins looked lived in.
So, Buckskin isn't completely a ghost town.
Frank shifted his gaze to the group of riders who had now reached the settlement with their prisoner. They drew rein in front of the largest business building in town. The bat-winged doors hanging in the entrance told Frank it was a saloon, or at least had been one when Buckskin was a thriving community. The bat wings were pushed aside as the men dismounted, and the sight of the man who stepped out onto the boardwalk made Frank's teeth grind together in rage. Charles Dutton hadn't changed a whole lot.
Do you think it'd be that easy, young lady? Just jump on a horse and ride out of here?
Yeah, I didn't think you and your morons would be smart enough to figure it out.
Thought you'd make it out of here and bring the law back with you, huh?
You don't belong here! This isn't your land! You came riding in here and took over the place and made us your prisoners!
So what? What are you or the old carter inside gonna do about it?
Give me a gun and I'll show you, you bastard!
I'm sorry, honey.
It's okay. It isn't your fault.
I wish I could hear what was going on, Stormy.
Dutton spoke rapidly to the older man and gestured toward the woman. The older man shook his head. Dutton made a sharp motion to the men holding the woman. They pushed her toward the older man, who took her in his arms and hugged her, obviously relieved. He turned and led her into the saloon with an arm around her shoulders. Dutton seemed to be satisfied. He nodded to the men who had captured the woman, and they walked off leading their horses. Frank's gaze lingered on each of their faces in turn as he committed them to memory. Two of those faces he recognized. They belonged to Carl Decker and Roy Hansen. They were hired guns and occasional outlaws who would do just about anything as long as they were being well paid. They were scum, but dangerous scum. Frank had no doubt that the other men were the same sort of no-account hombres. He finally lowered the field glasses and tucked them away in the saddlebags, confident that he hadn't been spotted. Frank had to find out as much as he could about the situation in Buckskin before he took action. He needed to know how many men Dutton had and where they were located. Likewise, he needed to know how many innocent people were left in the ghost town and where they were. It would be dark soon, and Frank decided that that would be the right time to slip into Buckskin and see what he could find out. When he thought it was dark enough, Frank headed out on foot toward Buckskin, leaving Stormy to graze in a safe place and taking Wolf with him. Frank had taken off his boots and pulled on a pair of soft, high-topped moccasins that would let him get around without making as much noise. He carried his Winchester in his hand and took a sheathed bowie knife from his saddlebags and attached it to his belt on the left side. Once along the way, a low growl from Wolf alerted him, and they both froze where they were while a man on horseback rode past some 50 yards away from them. The moon wasn't up yet, but enough stars had appeared in the sable sky above for Frank to be able to make out the rifle the man carried. one of the guards Dutton had posted, sure as shooting. The windows of the saloon were brightly lit, as if every lamp in the place were burning. Only a few of the other buildings showed any lights, though, and the cabins, Frank had noticed earlier that it looked like they were occupied, were among the darkened ones. Frank wondered if Dutton's gunmen had rounded up everybody who still lived in Buckskin and brought them to the saloon, where it would be easier to keep track of all of them. That seemed possible, even likely. And some of the hired killers were scattered around the settlement so that if Frank showed up, they would have a variety of angles from which to try to kill him. Dutton was approaching this like a military mission, and he had turned Buckskin into a fortress, all to protect him from one man. Moving as silently as a cat, Frank slipped up to one of the buildings in the settlement where a light showed. It was a squarish, squatty structure next to the barn, and Frank pegged it as having once been a blacksmith shop. Now, though, it was empty except for a rickety table, four chairs, and a bunk with a straw-tick mattress in one corner. A lantern sat on the table, illuminating the cards being used in the poker game going on. Four men were hunched in the chairs, studying their cards. Frank took in those details as he peered in through a window with most of its glass broken out. He had taken off his hat so that he could edge one eye past the window frame and get a look at what was going on inside.
Reckon I'll step outside for a minute.
All hell, Floyd! Just piss in that bucket over there! That's what it's there for!
Who said I needed to piss? Maybe I just want to stretch my legs and get some fresh air.
Floyd's bashful, y'all. He don't like to haul it out around anybody.
I bet he'd haul it out for that Woodford gal.
Lord, yes. You reckon Dutton will let us have a little fun with her once this business with Morgan's all over?
He'll probably be so grateful to anybody who kills Morgan that he'll let the fella do just about anything he wants. The way I hear it, Morgan gunned down 10 men back in Boston. They were tough hombres, too.
Oh, they was Eastern dudes. One of us is just as tough as 10 of them any day. I'll be back in a few minutes.
That's all right, Floyd. You go water the flowers. We'll just count all the dinero we've won from you tonight.
As he crouched in the darkness outside the window, Frank thought about what he had just overheard. He hadn't learned much, but the gunman had mentioned the name Woodford. Frank recalled that Woodford had been the name of the man who owned the Lucky Lizard Mine. Woodford must have stayed in Buckskin when the silver petered out, perhaps in hopes of finding another rich vein. Floyd circled the shack and headed for some trees. Frank left the window and moved along soundlessly behind the gunman, drawing his buoy from its sheath as he did so. When Floyd reached the edge of the trees, Frank stepped closer, looped his left arm around the man's neck, and pressed the tip of the blade against his back, pushing hard enough so that it went through Floyd's shirt and poked painfully into his flesh.
Don't fight and don't yell, because if you do, I'll slice that black heart of yours clean in two, you son of a bitch.
Inside the Silver Baron saloon, Charles Dutton sat at a table in a rear corner and mopped sweat from his forehead with a handkerchief he pulled from the breast pocket of his coat. The handkerchief was a fancy one, monogrammed and everything. There was a time when Dutton had taken pride in such elegance. Now he didn't care. He didn't care about anything, except wishing that Frank Morgan was dead. Dutton looked up and motioned to one of the men standing at the bar drinking. The man's name was Ed Ringgold, and he was the top man among the gun crew that Dutton had hired. Ringgold walked over to the table.
Sit down.
Dutton pushed the half-full bottle of whiskey across the table. Ringgold had brought his empty glass with him. He picked up the bottle, splashed liquor into it.
Thanks, boss. Do you think he'll come tonight? Do you think Morgan will be here?
You've been asking that question every night for the last three nights. I don't know, Mr. Dutton, but I do know that you don't have to worry about him. You've got 25 men you've paid, and paid well. Make sure that Morgan can't hurt you.
He's killed that many men before. More than that, a lot more. He may be the most dangerous man on the face of the earth.
Morgan is just one man, and he's as human as anybody else. No matter how good you are, there's always somebody better. We can handle him.
Dutton picked up his own glass and tossed back the whiskey that was still in it.
I hope so. I damn sure hope so.
Mr. Dutton, you've got me. half a dozen other guys in here and more upstairs guarding the prisoners and keeping watch from the windows.
The prisoners. Those fools. I thought there would be two or three, maybe. But 15 people still living in this hole? I just can't believe it.
Well, it's that silver fever, Mr. Dutton. They were gonna stay here until they found the next big load of silver.
Silver. That old fool Woodford still believes there's silver here.
Still, it was a good idea to bring them all here to the saloon to keep an eye on them.
I wish his daughter hadn't been here, though.
Huh. Diana. Now, that's a fine-looking woman. They're always nice to have around, Mr. Dutton.
She's a distraction.
What does it matter? After we kill Morgan, they're all gonna die anyway. Then we're gonna burn the town down around the bodies. No one will ever know they were even here.
Yes, that's a fact.
In addition to Woodford and his daughter, the other inhabitants of Buckskin included the handful of stubborn prospectors Dutton had expected, plus several people who had had businesses here when the town was a thriving community, a lunger who had come west for the dry, clean air of the high country, and some sort of college professor. There were three women besides Diana Woodford, the madam who had run one of the settlement's whorehouses, plus two of the girls who had worked for her. Of course, they weren't really girls anymore. All three females were approaching middle age, but they were still attractive enough to be unwanted distractions, too.
You have to make sure your men don't touch any of the women. I don't want them distracted.
They're being good boys. What about after Morgan is dead?
What they do with the time between when Morgan dies and when we burn the town is their business.
Well, that'll give them something to look forward to.
In addition to the men inside the saloon, a dozen more were scattered around the town, and several outriders were patrolling the slopes of the valley. Dutton knew that Morgan might manage to slip into the settlement despite those precautions. But if he did, he would find quite a warm reception waiting for him. A hot lead reception, in fact. Ringgold was right, Dutton told himself. Not even Frank Morgan could stand up to the odds that were arrayed against him now.
I hope Morgan does show up tonight. He's plagued me for long enough. Damn him to hell. I'm ready for him to die.
What do you do once he's dead?
Why, I'll go back to Boston and resume my life, of course. I'm an important man. I have many responsibilities.
Got more folks to fleece out of their money, eh?
You're being well paid. Just concentrate on your job. Killing Frank Morgan.
Don't kill me, mister. Please don't kill me.
Frank kept the pressure on the Bowie knife so the gunman wouldn't forget that it was there.
Take it easy. Cooperate with me and you don't have to die.
I'll do anything you want, mister. You're him, ain't you? You're Morgan.
I'm Morgan. So you know I don't have a lot to lose. I want Dutton, and I don't care who or how many I have to kill to get to him. Where is he?
In the saloon, I reckon. He hardly ever leaves there.
How many men are with him?
Oh, hell, I don't know for sure. 8 or 10, maybe more.
The people who live here, are they in there too?
Yeah. Button's got them locked in the rooms upstairs that the horse used to use.
How many of them are there?
14, 15, something like that.
Frank was surprised to hear that Buckskin had so many citizens these days. He could find out the reason for that later, though, if he lived through this night.
What about the rest of you? How many gunmen are there, and where are all of them?
There's a couple dozen, I guess. About that, anyway. I never counted everybody to make sure.
I know Decker and Hanson. Who else is here?
And Ringgold is the ramrod. You know him?
Heard of him. Go on.
Let's see. There's Morg Holmes, and Richter, and Foxbrick, Shoemaker, Spurlock, the Tacoma Kid, Walls and Barrett.
Floyd kept naming names, some of which Frank recognized and some he didn't. But the ones he knew were all bad men. Just the sort he would have expected a snake like Dutton to hire.
That may not be all of them, but it's all I can remember. They're scattered around the town. 2 here, 3 or 4 there. I don't know where everybody is.
You're doing fine.
You swear you ain't gonna kill me?
Not unless I have to.
Suddenly, the door of the old blacksmith shop opened, and one of the other gunmen stepped out. Frank pulled Floyd deeper into the shadows under the trees.
Hey! Floyd! You about done? We want to get the game going again.
Tell him to wait.
Frank put a little more pressure on the knife for emphasis.
Just hold your damn horses. I'll be there when I can.
Lord, Floyd, if I had your bowels, I'd go to the hospital.
Anything else you can tell me?
Just that if you let me get my horse, Morgan, I'll ride out of here and never look back. I don't want no part of this. I got nothing against you.
Then you shouldn't have taken Dutton's money.
Floyd began to tremble and cry, certain that Frank was about to plunge the long, heavy blade of the buoy into his vitals. Instead, with one swift movement, Frank pulled the knife away, lifted it, and slammed the knob of bone on the end of the handle against Floyd's skull, just behind the gunman's right ear. Floyd went limp and sagged against the arm pressed around his neck. The blow had knocked him cold. Frank lowered the unconscious man to the ground, tied him, and gagged him. He moved back into the trees and waited. Another 5 minutes went by, and then once again, the door of the old blacksmith shop opened, and one of the gunmen stepped out.
Hey, Floyd! Are you all right?
But Floyd couldn't answer.
Oh, every goddamn time.
And after a moment, the other gunny stalked toward the trees. He stopped just before he got there and drew his gun, evidently realizing that something might actually be wrong. They were here in Buckskin to wait for trouble, after all.
Floyd? Damn it, you better answer me if you're able.
When no answer came, the man swung around quickly toward the blacksmith shop. Frank knew he was about to call to the other two men for help. Before that could happen, Frank drew back his arm and let fly with the knife, throwing it as hard as he could. The blade struck the hired killer in the back, burying itself deep. The man staggered forward under the impact. Frank caught up with him an instant later, reaching around him to clamp one hand over his mouth and grab the man's gun with the other. His fingers closed over the weapon's cylinder so that it couldn't turn and fire. Frank used his body to drive the knife even deeper into the gunman's body. Frank eased him to the ground and felt for a pulse. There was none. That made two down, Frank thought grimly. One dead and one tied up so that he couldn't cause any trouble. Just 20 or so ruthless killers to go.
Barney! Floyd! What the hell's going on here?
When there was no answer, he turned and conferred with the man who was still inside the building. Then he hurried toward the saloon, obviously intent on warning Dutton and Ringgold that something was going on. Frank picked up his Winchester. Since the cat was about to be let out of the bag anyway, he didn't see any point in worrying about stealth anymore. He lifted the rifle to draw a bead on the man hurrying toward the saloon. But before he could press the trigger, a hand came out of the darkness and pushed the barrel of the rifle toward the ground.
Don't shoot! There's a better way!
Frank was astounded that anybody could sneak up on him like that without him hearing. He whirled toward the stranger, his hand dropping toward the butt of the Colt on his hip. The metallic ratcheting of a gun's hammer being cocked stopped him.
Hold on there, Morgan. I'm a friend, dammit.
How do you know who I am?
Oh, I've been skulking around here for the past 3 or 4 days, trying to figure out what's going on. I've been close enough to listen to them gunslicks talk, and they say they're waiting for a man named Morgan to show up so's they can kill him for that fancy pants fella. I reckon you must be him.
That's right. My name's Frank Morgan.
The gunfighter? I done heard of you. Folks say you're as fast as Smoke Jensen or Matt Bodine, maybe even a mite faster. Hard to outdraw a gun that's already drawn, though, ain't it?
If you're really a friend, you can stop pointing that hog leg at me.
Frank's eyes were keen enough to make out the rangy shape of the man, even in the shadows. He saw the big revolver in the stranger's hand, too. The man hesitated, but only for a second. Then he carefully lowered the hammer and holstered the gun.
This here's an old Walker Colt. A cap and ball job I didn't ever have converted to percussion. I've been carrying it nigh on to 50 years, and it ain't never let me down yet.
Who in blazes are you?
They call me Catamount Jack.
The stranger gestured toward the saloon.
And judging by the commotion that's brewing, we'd best fade out of here for a spell.
The man carrying the warning had reached the saloon, and now several more gunmen spilled out of the building, bristling with rifles, shotguns, and handguns. Frank and Catamount Jack withdrew deeper into the trees, well out of sight.
You told me your name, but I still don't know who you are.
I'm an old friend of Tip Woodford's.
Thomas Woodford? The owner of the Lucky Lizard?
That's right, but everybody calls him Tip. I done some prospecting with him a long time ago, but I give up before he ever struck it rich. Of course, them riches didn't last. The silver vein they found played out. But he lived high on the hog for a while first. Me, I do a little trapping and hunting and fishing. Being rich never appealed to me all that much.
What are you doing here?
I come to visit Tip and his gal. I try to stop by once or twice a year and say howdy. But when me and Eldorado got here, that's my mule, Eldorado, I seen right away that something was mighty wrong. Didn't see any of the folks who live in Buckskin, but I saw them gunnies strutting around, sure enough. Took me a while, but I finally figured out what's going on. Been waiting for you to get here ever since.
Waiting for me? Why?
Well, I'm a pretty tough old bird, but even so, I didn't figure I could kill all them bastards by myself. Thought I'd wait until you got here so as to even up the odds of might, you know. Now that I know you're Frank Morgan, I reckon they're even, all right.
Yeah, there are at least 20 of those hired killers, you know.
10 for you, 10 for me. Don't seem not no big deal.
Most of the time, Frank felt like he was an old-timer, but this man really fit that description. And as somebody who had spent more than half a century on the frontier, Catamount Jack was obviously as tough as wang leather. Frank had been thinking earlier about how he didn't have any allies in this fight. Now it appeared that fate had brought him a good one.
We still have to worry about the prisoners inside the saloon. That's where all the people who live here have gone. Dutton and his men rounded them up when they first got here.
Yeah, I reckon that was what happened. I got me an idea about that, though. What we got to do is draw them gunnies out of there. Then we'll take over the saloon and fort up in it.
Sounds like a good idea, but how do we get in there?
You don't know Buckskin like I do, son. There's an old tunnel, an offshoot of the Lucky Lizard, that goes right under the place. Got a trap door that leads up to the back room. We'll go in that way.
Sounds like you got it all figured out.
I've had plenty of time to think these past few days. Just needed a hand to carry out the plan, like I told you.
Frank heard shouts from the hired killers who were searching for him as they stumbled over Floyd and Barney, the man Frank had killed. Now they knew something was wrong, and as soon as Floyd was untied and spit that gag out of his mouth, he would tell them that he had been jumped by Frank Morgan.
All right. We'd better get busy.
Come on. I left Eldorado back yonder. And we'll need something I've got in my packs.
Jack led the way through the night with practiced ease. As they came up to a mule that had been tethered to a tree, the animal shied away nervously and was about to bray when Jack clamped a knobby hand over his muzzle. The old-timer looked around for the cause of the mule's nervousness.
What the hell's that, a wolf?
No, that's a friend of mine.
Oh, mighty spooky-looking friend, but I'll take your word for it.
Jack dug in one of the packs strapped to the mule.
Here we go.
Is that dynamite?
Damn sure is. I got 6 sticks of it. I reckon we can put them to good use.
I reckon we can. If we set off a few blasts around town, Dutton will panic and send most of his men out to see what's going on. Then we can get into the saloon through that tunnel.
That's the way I figured it, too.
The next few minutes were busy ones. The two men had to avoid the searchers as they circled around Buckskin. Along the way, Catamount Jack told Frank how to find the entrance to the tunnel. A trap door leading into it was located in the office of the old Lucky Lizard Mining Company. Jack pointed out the building to Frank. Then the two men split up, each of them taking 3 sticks of dynamite. Jack had cut fuses of varying lengths and attached them to the cylinders of explosive. The old-timer had also pointed out other buildings where members of Dutton's gun crew were hiding. Frank slipped up behind one of them and laid one of the sticks of dynamite against the rear wall, choosing the one with the shortest fuse. Leaving the fuse unlit, he moved on to the next building that concealed some of the hired killers. He placed the stick with the medium-length fuse against the back wall of that shack. Then, using shadows to mask his movements, he closed in on a third and final shack and planted the last stick of dynamite there. It had the longest fuse. Snapping a match into life with his thumbnail, Frank held the flame to the fuse, and when it began to sputter and spark, he turned and ran back to the second building. When that fuse was lit, Frank hurried to the first stick of dynamite and set fire to that fuse. Then he took off for the offices of the Lucky Lizard Mining Company, where he was supposed to rendezvous with Catamount Jack. The old frontiersman had been planting his sticks of dynamite on the other side of town. Cutting fuses wasn't an exact science, but their hope was that most of the dynamite would go off at about the same time.
Morgan, that you?
It's me, Jack. Did you get your dynamite planted?
A huge blast of noise and fire that ripped the night apart answered that question. The earth shook under Frank's feet. The tremendous explosion was followed almost instantly by several more thumping blasts.
The first one wasn't one stick of dynamite.
No, I found a shack where some old blasting powder from mining days was being stored. When the first stick of dynamite went up, it took all that powder with it. Mighty big bang, weren't it?
Sounded almost like the end of the world. Come on, let's find that tunnel.
The back door of the mining company office was locked, but the wood around the door was rotten and gave easily as Frank threw his shoulder against it.
Wolf, you stay.
Once inside, Jack struck a match. Frank heard shouting in the street outside. Dutton's men, the ones who had survived the explosions anyway, were trying to find out what the hell was going on. He and Jack had no time to waste.
There's the trap door.
Frank bent and caught hold of the leather strap attached to the door. He heaved, and the door came up, releasing cool, musty air that had been trapped underground for who knows how many years. He saw the rungs of a ladder just as the flickering light from the match went out. Sitting down with his feet dangling into the opening, Frank felt for the rungs and grasped the top one. He got one foot on the ladder, then his other foot, and he started climbing down. He hoped none of the rungs were rotten enough to break and dump him down the shaft. He had no idea how deep it was. He heard Jack climbing down above him. When they reached the bottom, it came as something of a surprise to Frank. The tunnel was only about 12 feet under the ground.
Why was this tunnel here?
Tip's sort of a odd fella. He owned the Silver Baron back then. That's the saloon, as well as the Lucky Lizard. And he lived above the saloon. He liked to be able to go back and forth without folks knowing what he was doing. But then Diana come out from the east to live with him after her ma died. And she didn't cotton much to her pa owning a saloon. So Tip sold the place. But the tunnel was still here.
The old-timer told the story as he and Frank made their way through the tunnel, feeling their way along. Cobwebs brushed against Frank's face, making his skin crawl. It took only a few minutes for them to reach the far end of the passage.
Here's the ladder.
I'll go first.
That's fine by me.
Frank climbed the ladder until the crown of his hat bumped against the underside of the trapdoor. He bent his head and reached up. When he pushed against the door, it didn't budge.
It won't open.
The horrible thought struck Frank that maybe the trapdoor on this end of the tunnel had been nailed shut.
Might be something setting on top of it. Give it a heave.
Frank bent over even more so that he could get his shoulder against the door. Then he straightened his back and pushed with his legs, and the door lifted a little. It wasn't fastened down anyway, and he was grateful for that.
It moved some. Let me try again.
Frank threw all his strength into lifting the trapdoor. It gave a little more. Suddenly the door flew up and back, and a heavy crash sounded in the room above. Some piece of furniture had been sitting on the door, and Frank had toppled it. Frank scrambled through into a dark room. A line of light showed under a door. Jack came out of the tunnel right behind him. Frank drew his Colt and went to the door. It seemed impossible that the crash of something falling over in here hadn't drawn any attention, but that seemed to be the case. Of course, with those explosions causing all hell to break loose outside, Dutton and his men were probably pretty distracted.
It's the main room of the saloon. It looks like your plan worked, Jack. Most of the gunnies are out looking for us.
You mean looking for you? They don't even know I exist.
Frank looked through the front window of the saloon and saw Charles Dutton standing on the boardwalk, looking around wildly. Only two of the gunmen were in the saloon, and they were guarding a group of about a dozen people who stood huddled to one side.
Take a look, Jack. The fine citizens of Buckskin are over there in a corner, being guarded by two gunnies.
Well, son, I think it's about time they were freed.
Frank swung the door all the way open and stepped into the barroom.
Hey!
The two gunnies spun toward him, looks of shock on their faces. They tried to get their hands down to their holsters, but they were too late. Frank shot both men, knocking them off their feet. The townspeople stared at him in fear and confusion, but Jack came out of the storeroom quickly.
Don't worry, folks! This fella's a friend!
Jack, thank God!
Morgan, he's in here! He's in the saloon!
Frank triggered a shot at him, shattering the window, but Dutton had already leaped back out of the line of fire.
Everybody down! Hunt some cover!
Frank took one side of the window, and Catamount Jack took the other. They opened fire on the hired killers who were charging the saloon. Frank with the Peacemaker, and Jack with the old cap-and-ball Walker Colt. A couple of the gunnies were knocked off their feet by the barrage. The others scattered, but kept shooting. Tip Woodford and his daughter Diana snatched up the guns dropped by the men Frank had shot and joined in the fight. They crawled up to the window on hands and knees and fired over the sill.
Are there any more of those gunnies upstairs?
Nah. They all went running out when those blasts went off. I reckon those explosions were the work of you and this old pelican, Mr. Morgan.
Who you calling an old pelican?
The only old pelican I see here is you.
Woodford squeezed off another shot. Beside him, Diana fired. As one of the hired gunmen tried to run from one bit of cover to another, and the man flipped off his feet.
Good shooting, gal.
I had a good teacher.
I guess we got rid of a heap of Dutton's men with those blasts, Frank.
We're still outnumbered, though, Jack.
Yes, they were still outnumbered, and Dutton's men were experienced, ruthless killers. If they charged the saloon, they would take some losses, but they could probably fight their way in and slaughter everybody in here.
Outnumbered? Ha! We can fix that.
Lord, you're right.
Hey, everyone. The weapons they took from us are behind the bar. Get them. We need everybody shooting right now.
With an eager rush, the citizens of Buckskin armed themselves. The odds had just gotten a lot more even.
Let those gun wolves come a-calling. They'll get a hotter welcome than they expect.
Frank couldn't see Dutton, but he heard the man screaming orders.
Get in there! Get in there and kill them all!
The gunman hung back, not wanting to risk the deadly accuracy of the saloon's defenders.
$20,000 to the man who kills Morgan!
That temptation was more than the remaining gunnies could resist. They knew that some of them would die, but maybe one would be lucky enough to survive and collect that $20,000 bounty. Each thought that he would be that one lucky man. With guns geysering flame, they charged the Silver Baron Saloon. Frank, Catamount Jack, and the citizens of Buckskin returned the savage fire. Lead flew through the air like a swarm of deadly bees. Frank felt bullets tug at his shirt, and his Stetson flew off his head, a fresh hole in its crown. But even in the face of such a fierce assault, Frank remained cool-nerved and steady, taking his time as he picked his targets and fired. And each time the peacemaker bucked in his hand, another hired killer went down. The charge reached all the way to the boardwalk before its back was finally broken by the fierce resistance. The handful of remaining gunmen, all of them wounded, threw down their guns and shoved their hands in the air.
Don't shoot!
For God's sake, don't shoot anymore!
Keep an eye on them. I'm gonna go take a look around.
Jack and Woodford covered the gunmen who had surrendered, while Frank inspected the damage. The defense of the saloon had been successful, but it had not come without a price. Two men who had been among the defenders were down, lying motionless on the floor with bloodstains spreading on their shirts. Several more men and one of the women were wounded, but the injuries didn't look too bad. Frank wondered who all these people were and what they had been doing in Buckskin before Dutton and his killers rode in and treed the town. Such a thing wouldn't have happened in the old days, Frank knew, because then the citizens would have outnumbered the gunnies and would have been armed and willing to use their guns. As it was, Buckskin's populace had given a good account of itself in the end, and none of them had anything to be ashamed of. Frank was proud to have fought at their side. He shouldered the shot-up bat wings aside and stepped out onto the boardwalk.
Where's Dutton?
Hiding somewhere, the cowardly little weasel.
When he hired us, he said all we had to do was kill one man. He didn't say anything about getting blowed up or having to fight a whole damn town.
Your choice to take a hand in this game.
Frank turned to Catamount Jack, who had come out onto the boardwalk behind him.
Find a place to lock these bastards up.
What are you fixing to do, Morgan?
Find Dutton.
Want some help?
No, I reckon I can handle this chore.
Frank started walking in the direction from which he had last heard Dutton's voice shouting orders. His eyes roved constantly to both sides of the street, searching the shadows for any sign of the man he sought.
You hear me, Dutton? This is Frank Morgan, and I'm coming for you. It's time you paid for what you did to Vivian and to everybody else you ever betrayed, Dutton. You're not getting away this time.
The window of a building to Frank's left suddenly shattered as someone inside fired a gun through it. The bullet kicked up dust in the street about 10 feet in front of Frank. Without drawing his gun, Frank turned and paced steadily toward the building.
Well, you'll have to do better than that, Dutton.
Dutton burst from the door, triggering wildly as he ran along the boardwalk.
Justice, Dutton!
The gun in the crooked lawyer's hand was now out of ammo. None of the shots had come close to Frank.
That's what you got coming to you, and that's what you're gonna get.
Dutton threw the empty six-shooter at Frank. It sailed harmlessly over his head. Dutton stumbled on down the boardwalk. Dutton ran into the front door of a building and fell through it when it sprang open. Scrambling up, he ran into the darkened interior. Just as Frank reached the doorway, he heard Dutton scream again. Frank paused and looked at the fading lettering on the building's window, Lucky Lizard Mining Company. The finality with which Dutton's scream had ended gave Frank a pretty good idea of what had happened. He stepped inside and struck a match. A square hole yawned in the floor where the trap door had been flung back when Frank and Catamount Jack went through there earlier. Frank stepped over to the opening and held the match up so that the light from it fell down into the hole. Charles Dutton lay unmoving at the bottom of the shaft that provided an entrance to the tunnel. The fall wasn't a long one, but it had been long enough. Dutton's head was twisted at an odd angle on his neck, and his eyes were already glassed over in death. The room got brighter, and Frank glanced over his shoulder to see Catamount Jack coming in with a lantern in his hand. Behind the old-timer came Tip Woodford, his daughter Diana, and several other citizens of Buckskin.
That's him, all right. Dutton, wound up with a broke neck, just like he dropped through the trap door of a gallows with a hang rope around his neck. Sort of fitting, if you ask me.
Yeah, like I told him, justice was done.
Yeah, but it don't change one damn thing that happened in the past, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Frank dropped the burned-out match into the hole. Then he turned away from the trapdoor and didn't look back. By the time a week had passed, Buckskin was back to normal. The debris of the burned buildings had been cleared away. The dead had been buried in a small cemetery up on the hillside, left over from the settlement's boomtown days. The wounded had been patched up, and several of the townspeople had volunteered to take the prisoners into Virginia City so they could be turned over to the law. Frank stayed there in Buckskin, enjoying the chance to rest for a few days, to sit in the shade and sip coffee and talk with Catamount Jack and Tip Woodford, both of whom he liked a great deal.
You feel more relaxed now, Morgan?
Yeah, it's been nice.
Well, everybody seems to like having you around, especially Diana.
Yeah, I like her too. And that's a problem. I am, as you have probably noticed, a good 15 or 20 years too old for her.
Oh, that don't seem to bother her much, judging by the way she sort of hangs around and talks and smiles a lot.
Yeah, still, might be best for all concerned if I ride on out of here before things get too complicated.
Sounds a bit like running to me, son.
I don't know, Jack. I never stay in one place for long. I am the drifter, after all, right?
So I hear tell.
Jack was eyeing Frank with a critical look, so it was a relief to see Tip Woodford come in and walk across the room to his table.
Mind if I join you?
Sure, have a seat.
Frank really liked the burly old prospector.
All the fellas are back from Virginia City. They didn't have no trouble getting those prisoners there. Don't know if they'll hang or not, but if they don't, they'll be behind bars for a long time, where they belong.
I'm glad to hear it.
I've been talking to some folks. Professor Burton and old Jack here and Leo Benjamin and some others.
What about?
Well, we've been thinking that Buckskin might turn into a real town again someday soon. And if it does, the place will need a mayor. The others sort of insisted that I take that job.
Sounds like a good idea. You kept the place going all these years since the silver played out.
Yeah. You know how come I happened to name my mine the Lucky Lizard, Frank?
I can't say as I do. I don't think I ever heard the story.
Well, I hadn't had any luck prospecting around here. And one day, when I was about to give up and go back east, I sat down on a rock and happened to see a lizard scurrying along. Now, it ain't like I'm over fond of lizards or anything like that, but this little fella caught my interest somehow, and I watched him run around till he went up the side of the hill and disappeared in a crack. When I was looking at the place where he ran into the hill, something about it sort of made me look again. I took my pick, started chipping away at the rock.
And that was where you found your vein of silver.
Yep. That lizard brought me luck. So I figured the least I could do was name the mine after him. Paid off pretty handsome for a while, too. But then I lost the vein and could never find it again.
Silver is like luck, I guess. It runs out sometime.
Yeah, and sometimes it comes back, like a lizard poking his head out of a hole in the rock.
Tip reached into the pockets of his overalls and brought out something from each one, keeping his hands closed so that Frank couldn't see what he had.
Got two things here I want to show you, Frank.
He opened his left hand and set a lump of dark gray rock on the table.
You know what that is?
Well, it looks like silver ore.
That's what it is. I found the vein again, Frank. And it's bigger and better than the one before. Buckskin's gonna be more than just a real town again. It's gonna be a boom town.
Oh, congratulations, Mayor. I'm happy for you and all the rest of the good people here.
You ain't seen this other thing yet. If Buckskin starts booming again, it'll need more than the mayor.
Tip opened his right hand to reveal a tin star lying on his palm.
It'll need a marshal, too. Interested in the job, Frank?
All Frank could do for a moment was stare at the badge in Tip's hand. The offer had taken him completely by surprise. He had had plenty of run-ins with the law over the years, but nobody had ever asked him to pin on a badge until he'd gotten mixed up in that range war down in Arizona a few months earlier. Now it had happened again. Maybe somebody was trying to tell him something.
What do you say, Frank? I know you've always been a mite fiddle-footed, but I've talked Jack into being your deputy, and if this old Pelican can settle down, I reckon anybody can.
Ah, Pelican!
Frank looked past Tip out of the window of the cafe, along the main street of Buckskin. If Tip had really found a silver bonanza, this sleepy little ghost town would be transformed nearly overnight into a hell-roaring boomtown. And that transformation would likely bring with it all sorts of problems, trouble that the good citizens of Buckskin couldn't handle on their own. He thought about Elysium, too, and the way those folks had stood together for what they believed in. About Buffalo Bill, and the bittersweet way the old showman's Wild West extravaganza represented the end of an era, the passing of a time that would never come again. And about the weariness that came to a man when he had drifted for too damned long, always leaving behind friends and family and striking out for someplace new, even though Frank had never found true contentment in places, but only in the people who lived there. Frank Morgan reached across the table to take the badge out of Tip's hand.
You got yourself a marshal.
The Last Gunfighter Avenger is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2007, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Mort Shelby, Thomas Penny, Christopher Graybill, Tim Getman, Richard Rowan, M.J. Casey, Terrence Aselford, Jeff Baker, Casey Platt, Michael Glenn, Elizabeth Jernigan, Joe Brack, Jonathan Watkins, Dylan Lynch, Johan Detweiler, Nanette Savard, Scott McCormick, Lily Beacon, Tim Carlin, and Eric Messner. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Ken Jackson. Book adapted for graphic audio by Jimmy Payne. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton. Original music by Brian Patton and Johan Detweiler. Title theme by Johan Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed The Last Gunfighter, be sure to look for the series Sidewinders, as well as Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man, and The First Mountain Man. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other graphic audio thrillers.
What is your name?
Anya Creed.
I see.
Who are you?
My name is Agamemnon. We have your passport here.
They took it from me when I was kidnapped.
We will videotape your beheading and then broadcast it all over the world.
Beheading?
Are you afraid to die?
I faced death before.
I will kill you!
Don't move. Who are you?
My name is Anya Creed. The Abu Sayyaf kidnapped me several days ago. I have no idea where I am.
You live here, or are you just passing through?
Gunnery Sergeant Vic Gutierrez, United States Marine Corps.
Something bothering you, Vic?
I got this feeling like someone's keeping an eye on us.
Excuse me!
What happened?
Anya, wake up and pay attention.
Where are we?
You are in a cavern located far beneath the surface of the jungle. You're wasting your time. You would need to be a lot stronger than you are in order to break free. Besides, you are to be sacrificed to our god.
I don't believe you.
Very well. You believe now, don't you?
Oh, great.
Oh, crap.
Rogue Angel 18. Sacrifice. In Graphic Audio. If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.